PFT Media.
All episodes of The Experience with Chris Fio were recorded prior to the COVID-19 pandemic.
This is The Experience with Chris Fio. In each episode, Fio brings his unique and unashamed interview style to Central Florida. He conducts honest and open interviews with people that have the vocabulary and expertise that he lacks.
This week on The Experience with Chris Fio, I talk with my friend Patricio Solano. Solano is one of the major driving forces in the Orlando podcast scene. His influence and creativity can be heard on programs such as Entering the Black Hole, Table Talk, and as well as the show he created for himself, A Side of Chaos.
Hustler, gun in a holster. That vision is slipping like a worn transmission. The days of transporting and not transmitting because the transcontinental.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Experience with Chris Fio. Today I have with me Patricio Solano of.
With A Side of Chaos, Table Talk, and all of Orlando, basically.
Wow, that's really great. How's your day been so far, brother?
Dude, today has been pretty chill. On a figuring a Monday, I don't know if you know that I work at a law firm, and I do criminal defense.
Really? Tell me more about that.
Criminal defense? Oh my God! Just basically getting bad people off the hook, or getting them a deal that will allow them to continue with a good life.
Yeah. How is it in day-to-day life as a criminal law lawyer?
Well, paralegal or legal assistant in a sense. Basically, I am the guy who prepares the files, researches the case, reviews discovery, and makes sure the attorney has the proper ammunition to take the case to pretrial, negotiate with the state attorney's office, and if need be ready for trial at any point.
Wow, that is interesting. How long ago did you get into this?
I started this back in 2014, and it was honestly because a friend of mine calls me up out of nowhere, and I was actually a sanitation supervisor at Celebration Hospital, calls me up and is like, dude, my girlfriend works at this law firm, and they're looking for someone who's bilingual. I'm like, okay, I don't want to work in a law firm. He's like, you got nothing to lose. I sent him my resume. 2 weeks later, I got the job. I'm leaving the place where I'm at, and 3 months later, I am working as a criminal defense legal assistant, and then about less than a year later, I'm running the entire department. The attorney got rid of the two people who were kind of holding him back on the way he wanted to run the cases and was like, if you can do this, I will bump you up, and you'll be fine.
That is really amazing.
And I love it. It's just being able to... And here's the thing. I've had my legal issues in the past.
Cat's giving us some entertainment right now.
The cat was literally doing a cliffhanger from the curtain, but
yes, she did. She I just turn over and holy crap.
Oh no, my earlier episodes of Chaos, we had Kirsten's dog barking up a storm in the background. You'd hear her nails as she walked across the house, but it's all good with animals. No, I've had my legal issues back in the day. I did some time in Osceola County for a violation of probation, and it got me some really good experience because when I talked with a client and with a client's family, I can relate to them. Sometimes, you know, let's say, for example, you have some legal issues. You're working with you're talking to a legal assistant, and sometimes you get a little frustrated because, oh, you don't know what I'm going through. You don't know the stress that I deal with on a day-to-day basis because of the bullshit that I just went through. I'm like, yes, I do. I've been behind those walls. I've lost my civil rights. I've dealt with the hardship and the fucked up part of the legal system. I've seen the rough end side of it, and now, you know, being able to be on the other side and assisting people who, once in a while, you fuck up. Once in a while, you make that really stupid mistake, and some people learn from it, and they, you know, they're able to expunge their record and move on with their lives. But then there's some people who are kind of just stuck in the legal system, and it really sucks. But being there to help you out and help someone out and trying to better their lives, it's a reward in itself every time that I work a case.
I love hearing that. Let me ask, what is the worst case that you've had to deal with?
Without going into full details, because, you know, attorney-client privilege, I've dealt anything from petty thefts, possession charges, to possession of child pornography, second degree murder, and oh my god, I'm trying to think of another one, like a closed case that I could actually talk about. Sexual assault cases. So, and the ones that I deal with a lot are domestic violence, and that's where I get a little bit. It's the biggest challenge, because sometimes with domestic violence cases, you have to defend the dude who really fucked up, who may or may not have hit his wife, may or may not have, you know, tried to cause bodily harm to her. And it's at the end of the day, and I hate using that phrase, at the end of the day, it's like there've been some cases where I go home and I'm like, I can't believe we won that case. And this dude was a piece of shit. But, you know, the attorneys take an oath. This is their field of practice. This is the way they make a living. And I have to suck it up. And I have to move forward with that.
So that comes with legal principles.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't want to say you put aside your morals, but you put aside judgment. Because, and this is where I'll get a little theological on you, let he without sin be the one to cast the first stone. No one in this world is perfect, and we can't judge. Unfortunately, you know, we do have a legal system in this country where one person is allowed to judge, but it's our job to make sure that this person has a fair and just legal system applied to their case.
I understand that. Has there been any case that you had to turn away?
Unfortunately, I take that back. No, because the attorney is the one who makes that decision. There have been cases that I've worked on that I like, oh my god, like I've read the discovery, I've talked to the client, and I'm like, yo, you do. Like, I'm loosening my collar at this point. But each case is completely different. And I talk to clients all the time, and they're like, oh, a friend of mine got this kind of deal. You know, why can't you get me this? I'm like, every case is different. You could be charged. You and me can be in the car, and they find a bag of weed on us. But some little thing is different than your case than mine. And being able to work those cases, being able to find a way to get them off the hook or get them, you know, a proper sentence, I'm not able to make that decision. But there have been cases where I'm like, yeah, I hate this case.
I couldn't agree. And is there any laws you personally have any opinions against or for?
I feel that cannabis, weed, marijuana, the good shit, should be recreational. I lived in Colorado before, back in 2004 for college, and I had moved there right as Colorado just passed the bill to allow medical marijuana. Got my card, got everything, and I suffered from epilepsy.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. And it took about 3.5 years of trial and error of trying different strains of marijuana because of the medication that I was on was causing damage to my liver. I was 20 years old with the liver of a 45-year-old.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. And I like to drink.
Don't we all at this point?
I like to drink. I like to have a good time. And to the point where I was pissing blood. And I'm like, no, I need to find an alternative. And there were a lot of stories coming out of Colorado where people were trying medicinal marijuana in substitute of medication, you know, prescribed stuff. And I'm like, you know, let me give it a shot. I've been here 6 months. I'm a legal resident. I can apply for this. And I went through it. And like I said, it was a trial and error of almost 3.5 years till we found the right strand. And luckily, I am now 9+ years seizure free because I got a certain strain of marijuana that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That helps me out. Now, I still once in a while wake up with like my petty mild shakes and, you know, It's a condition that, you know, I deal with on a daily basis, but I haven't had like the full out seizure where I bite my tongue, I shit my pants, and I don't remember what happened 3 hours ago.
That's scary, I'm betting.
Oh yeah, no. I can give you just a quick summary, and this is actually one that I told on Tom and Dan. I had a seizure working at Disney, And the day I was working at Disney, I was Goofy at Epcot. Yeah. So the thing with epilepsy, you're supposed to have a full night's rest. You're supposed to have take care of yourself and just do not abuse your body. That night, I abused the shit out of my body. I was out and about for the whole night, partying up, drinking, smoking, just having a good time. And I was reckless. And then I slept maybe like 2-3 hours in my car, and I went straight to work and I got my costume, and I'm just like, I'm just jolting the whole time. People are like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And the thing is, after one of those little petty shakes, you kind of lose focus of where you're at for a split second. And fast forward, I'm in full costume. We do the open for Epcot, and we go in for the meet and greets, and I'm still like just jolting every time. Like, I think I may have elbowed Mickey in the head at one point.
Sorry, Mickey.
And then I remember it clearly because it was the last thing I remembered. The thing is with Goofy, you're looking through the mouth. You're not looking through the eyes, so I always have to look down. And then I trying to put my arm around this family, and then my arm just starts going up. And I'm telling my mind I have to put my arm around the family. And it's not listening. It just keeps going up and up and up. And now I want to talk, and I can't. I'm here, but I have no control. And then everything goes to black. And then I wake up, and I see Minnie, Mickey, and Pluto shaking me, saying, are you okay? And then I black out again. Next thing you know, I wake up in an ambulance. And it's honestly like when Call of Duty, when the frag grenade goes off and you hear like the... I look at my hands. I'm like, what happened? The paramedic was like, you just had a seizure. We're taking you to the hospital right now. And kind of moving around. You've been to Disney before, right?
Yes, I have.
Have you met Goofy?
I haven't been there early enough to meet any of the actors. I'm sorry.
So Goofy has a padded suit because he has kind of like a beer belly. Yeah. Big butt, all that stuff. But it's a pad that goes underneath the suit. And at this point, I had lost control of my bowels and shit my pants.
Sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah. It's a story that I kept quiet for a long time. But then Tom and Dan were like, oh, we need Shart stories for the Shart Week 2017. I'm like, you know what? I'll do it. Tom and Dan were losing their shit to the point where I think Dan was like gagging on air because he's like, oh my God, that's disgusting. I can't. And only reason why I didn't win it was I had won the ticket challenge the week before. Yeah. But I know I completely averted the question, but the one law that would change here in Florida is the marijuana laws. Because yes, there are people here who do it, you know, recreational, just to have a good time, escape from everything. But then you take that one phrase, escape from everything, whether it's escape from depression, escape from anxiety, escape from bipolar, whatever your ailment may be. Marijuana is a natural herb that has its benefits. It's gotten a bum rap over decades because, oh, you just want to get high. I'm like, no, I just want to fucking live.
Exactly.
I want to be able to be a functioning member of society. I will never smoke and operate a motor vehicle. I will never smoke and put myself in a situation where I need to function, but I can't be 100% functional. Every time that I've taken my medicinal strain is when I'm in the comfort of my own home. I have 4 hours to myself. I have no obligation to no one or anything, and I'm able to enjoy my high, but at the same time, give my body the supplements that it needs that it can't produce to be fully functional.
Well, I understand that completely, you know, because there are a lot of people who have certain diagnoses that need attending to, yours, like epilepsy. And I was wondering, when was the first time you found out you were epileptic, or did it come on suddenly?
It actually came on sudden. I was 12 years old. I had just moved here from Chicago, and I remember my mom bringing me pizza for my birthday at school, which was like, everyone looked at me like, why are you bringing pizza to school? I'm like, it's my birthday. People looked at me like, okay, whatever.
Well, screw them.
And I was holding the box of pizzas, passing out the slices, and I kind of shook, and the box fell. My mom was like, are you okay? I'm like, I don't know what the hell just happened. And she's like, okay. And then a couple days passed by, and it happened again, where I was just doing something where I was kind of focused on, and I just shook. And then the day, I remember the day clearly, where I was, my friend Monica calls me in the morning, and she's like, hey, we're going to the movies today. You want to meet up with us? Sure, what time? Gives me the info, and I've got a couple hours to kill. Mind you, I'm 12 years old. I still play with Legos.
Good old Legos and Bionicles.
And I was building some Lego stuff, and that was just like my therapy. I'd love playing with Legos, doing little battles, and like just venting my imagination to something that it's me having fun. And I remember sitting at my table in my room, and next thing you know, like I'm putting a piece together, and then like I can't move my hand, and and then I just stretched out my word, and then like everything in the room just started shaking, just like a fucking earthquake. And then I woke up on a stretcher looking up at lights and them rushing me, and I hear my mom screaming, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And then I blacked out, and then I woke up in the emergency room, and I had the worst taste in my mouth because I'd bitten my tongue multiple times, and the taste that someone has after a seizure is one of the worst. Oh my God, I can't even like put into terms what it tastes like. It's just like one of the worst tastes you'll have, and anything you eat, you can't even drink water because it tastes horrible. You can't eat because you want to throw it back up. So then when like you're actually hungry and thirsty, you have to suck it up because it tastes like shit. But my mom comes in and she's like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And she's a surgical coordinator, so she knows medicine. And the thing was, she kind of thought that like I was faking it. Yeah.
Wow.
She thought I was faking me shaking. And then when the doctors were like, he had a seizure, we believe he may have epilepsy, we're going to do some more blood work. And then 5 hours later, you know, after everything has been said and done, the doctor was like, yeah, your child may have epilepsy. We're going to send you to a neurologist to do a CT scan, MRI, and the whole works. And like right then and there, like my life changed. I was on medication every day. I was seeing doctors once a month. I was being hooked up to machines where, you know, I'm 12 going on 13 right now. I should be out having a good time, enjoying life. And I'm being subjected to medical research. I'm being subjected to medication that, like, I don't know what I'm putting in my body. But apparently I need to take this to be able to be a fully functional member of society. And I saw some good benefits. I was healthier for a little while. But then I started, you know, feeling pains. I started feeling this, and then they switched my medication. It was just like I must have gone through like maybe 4 or 5 different medications for epilepsy, different dosages. Because like the first few, like I was still having seizures. I was still, you know, this. I had to change my diet. I had to change like my approach on life, and it was tough. But years passed by. I find out about marijuana. Oh, come on. I mean,
what age did you find out about marijuana?
I was 17 when I had my first blunt.
Really? How did that feel the first time?
That was awesome. We had just finished a football game. I played football. At one point I'd realized that I didn't want to let my epilepsy control me anymore. I was still doing shit that I shouldn't have done. My mom was like, "You know, you have to be careful. You can't do this, you can't do that." I'm like, "I'm not going to let this disease prohibit me from doing what I want to do in life." I boxed, which is one of the worst things to do.
Wow. How did that work out? Were you Golden Gloves?
I got in third place for Golden Gloves, so I didn't go all the way out. I was signed with MoFire Productions back when I was 18. I did 23 pre-professional fights. My end record was, oh my God, this is so embarrassing, 19-3, and I lost my last 3 fights back-to-back because I got reckless. I thought I got cocky, And then I kept telling my promoters and like asking everyone, like, I want the bigger fights. I want this. I want that. And I wasn't ready. And my trainer was telling me, like, no, you're not ready for this. And I basically said, fuck you. I want the big fights. I want this. And I guess it was like I wanted the payout and I wanted the titles, but I wasn't ready.
What way weren't you ready?
Light heavyweight.
Oh, wow. That's a class.
Yeah. I was 184. And yeah. Imagine me at
184. Shredded.
I was skinny, but I was shredded. And my grandfather was the one who pushed me. My grandfather was like the one who actually put that in my head, like, you can't let this disease hold you back. You can't be a pussy, was literally what he was saying. And he would drop me off 3 miles from the house every day, and I would jog, run it before school, and like he kept me tight. But then when he passed away, I thought that like I had a good grasp on it. I won a few matches after he had passed, but then, like I said, I got cocky. I went through college and I fucked up.
Wow, is there a different level when you go to college?
So I'm still, even though I was young, because I was over the age of 18, I was still, I could, whoever was in my weight class, I was allowed to fight. So it wasn't that I couldn't because of my age. It was all the weight class. So I had fought people my age up until like the age of like 30 or 33. And, you know, I put up some good fights, but then I got, like I said, I got cocky and I got my ass knocked out the very first time, my 20th match. And it was, I stretched back because I had the dude against the ropes. And I go back, it's like my arms were getting were tightened up. So I do the dumbest thing and I stretch both my arms back, left my body and my head open. Dude came back, hit me with a 1-2. Last thing I heard was 8, 9, 10 and the bell.
Well, you were loosening your arms up at the time, but yeah, it could be construed as a little cocky, you know.
Yeah, I fucked up right there. And it's... But part of me has been wanting to get back into it, but since I've been doing great in regards to health wise with epilepsy, I don't want to put myself in danger. Because like now I'm 33 years old. Back then it was like, you know, it was my late teens, early 20s, and my body can handle it. Now I'm just like, I may not be able to.
Yeah, we're reaching a certain age now. But would you ever consider just doing it for like practice instead of competition wise?
I've been thinking about it more and more because I have a coworker of mine at the law firm that she's like on Groupon a couple of weeks ago. She's like, "Oh my god, I found this cool thing! You know, it's for boxing." I'm like, "Come again? Let's get it! Here's the money. Let's do it!" And she's the kind of person that she'll say she want to do something but never like execute. So we lost out on that Groupon, but I told her, hey, if you find something again, I'm in. I'm totally in. And I've actually, these past going on 3 months now, I've decided to go back to the gym. I've decided to try and get my body, I don't want to say the way it was back when I was in high school and college, because that's fucking impossible.
Yeah. Back then, my skinny. Oh, sorry, but yeah, it's impossible.
Yeah, no. Right now, I mean, I'm 6'2". I weigh 252 pounds, and for me to get back to 180, that's a good one. I like bacon.
Man, so how's your diet so far since you mentioned bacon?
So with going back to the gym, I've tried my like the first 3 weeks was insane. I was going to the gym every day. There were some times where like I would go twice, even not, if not three times a day. Like I got bit by the fitness bug, and I was only drinking waters or natural juices. There was no soda. I didn't drink alcohol for 3 weeks. And
congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you. And it's funny the way it all happened. Just a quick story, and I'll get back to this. Kirsten and I went out for St. Patrick's Day, met up with a friend of hers, and we're like, we're going to keep partying, we're going to go this way, and then we lost her. And then we decided to go home, We get home. I'm literally on the couch with a sandwich in my hand, on my belly. I got my drink ready to go, and then her phone goes off. I'm drunk. Come get me. Long story short, we get to downtown. We find her, and she is piss ass drunk. Like, this girl cannot remember what day it was, where she parked, all that stuff. So we get her in the Uber, and mind you, she weighs maybe 110, 120 pounds. Mind you, 6'2", 250 plus. I get out, and she is knocked the fuck out in the back seat. So I pick her up, and I walk her from the street up to the house, through the house, onto the couch, which was maybe like a 15, 20 second walk. And I put her down on the couch, and I'm like, holy shit. This, like, oh my God. Like, I was winded, like, horribly.
So that was the moment.
That was when I'm like, yo, no. I can lift bitches like crazy back in the day. I can't be like this. And took a solemn oath. I'm like, I've been paying for this membership for Planet Fitness for like 4 years now. And I go, it's like going to church on the holidays kind of thing. And I decide to go back. I change everything. I told Kirsten, I am not drinking. I'm doing this. And in 3 weeks, I'd lost 20 pounds.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I was shocked myself because like the weight just kept coming off because I cut out all the bad shit, all the fatty foods. I was eating salads, good protein, water, and constantly going to the gym to like staying maybe 2 or 3 hours daily. And then going to the gym in the morning, which waking up at 4:30, 5 o'clock before going to work, and then during lunch going for half an hour just to lift, and then after work another 2 hours. Like, I was running maybe 3 to 4 miles a day on the treadmill, lifting like crazy, doing cardio, doing core, and I was happy. And I had posted a picture of me, like, the before and after, because it was, my before was horrible. My after work, it looked amazing. And now it's like, okay, I'm okay where I'm at, but like, I know damn well I can do better. And I've gotten a bit lazy. So with my podcast as well, I've focused more on that and stopped focusing on me.
Right. And how was the podcast? Did that come after you got out of boxing?
The podcast came, actually, it's funny because my podcast came about 6-7 months ago. But I was with Rick and Anthony on Entering the Black Hole, and Rick reached out to me after I met him at Stardust one day, and was like, "Hey, dude, how would you like to come on the show?" I'm like, "You have a show?" He's like, "Yeah, I got a podcast, bro. Come on out." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm going to be on a podcast. You know, Tom and Dan have a podcast. This is so cool." I go into Rick's house. Like, you've been there.
Yeah, I have.
And we met there a couple times.
Yeah.
I was amazed by what Rick had. You know, from the outside, you don't suspect that there's a fucking studio in there. And I'm like, oh, okay. They threw questions at me. We had a great interview. About 2 or 3 weeks later, he reached out to me. He's like, "Hey, you want to come back on?" I'm like, "Fuck yeah." I just like started to text message you. I'm like, "Hey, if you want me to be on the show, I'm available." And then a couple more days passed by, and he's like, "Dude, how would you like to be the third mic?" Fuck yeah. I ended up recording about maybe 40 plus episodes with Rick and Anthony, and I loved it.
Wow.
Had a great time. But behind the scenes, there were some issues. And, you know, not to talk shit about those two, because, you know, they're amazing, amazing human beings.
Just creative differences, I'm guessing.
Let's call it that. We'll call it that. I think you and I kind of understand where the animosity and where the drama was at, but we'll call it creative differences. And I felt that I couldn't be who I wanted to be with the show anymore. And, you know, like, it was like one of the hardest phone calls to make, that I call Rick and I'm like, "Bro, you've been like a brother to me, but, you know, I gotta say no for now." And like, he was like, "Dude, what, I understand it. I'm sorry." And, you know, I've came back, you know, a couple of times just, you know, to do a show. And I was there at their live event at Johnny's Other Side And I, you know, I had that time frame, like maybe like 2 or 3 months, like I wasn't on a podcast. And then I did Halloween Horror Nights and I met my co-host Jess. And we just started having the funniest conversations while she was doing my makeup. And I'm like, you know what? How would you like to do a podcast? She's like, oh my God, let's do it. And the first month was just, I would go to her to do my makeup every time. And we would talk about bounce ideas back and forth from each other. And then I was like, we got to come up with a name. We have great chemistry, but we need a name. And she's like, all right, we'll think about this. We'll get back into it tomorrow. And the whole time from like those 24 hours, I kept thinking about, I need something that, you know, resemble, like I can relate to in my life and people could relate to with their lives. And I'm like, you know what? I love chaos. I love, you know, rattling cages. I love just, you know, I don't want to say causing shit to happen, but like watching reactions, watching people interact with certain situations and just, you know, just watching that. And I'm like, chaos, chaos, chaos. And I'm talking to her and she's like, you know, I was thinking about we should do like a food show. I'm like, well, what? No, I want to do a comedy. I want to do like informative stuff. And she's like, well, we can do, you know, with a side of, what? Wait, what'd you say? She's like, you know, a side of chaos, you know, like we're doing food. I'm like, wait a second. I think that's it. And she's like, what do you mean? And like, I said, like, what about a side of chaos? And she's like, what about, like, she put the word with, and boom, we recorded our first show in the last day of Halloween Horror Nights. We had talked to Sloppy Taco Palace to allow us to record there, which they did. But mind you, it was my first time recording a podcast by myself, and it came out horrible. There was so much noise in the background, you could barely hear the conversation, and I still have it saved because every now and then I go back to like try and edit, try and fix, but like I'm still learning shit from having a show. And then, you know, we learn from the mistakes. We're like, never again are we recording at a live huge event. And we, you know, we started doing our thing. Her schedule got a little bit tough, and then I brought on some more people. And then Table Talk was born, but then things started picking up with Jess, and she was available more and more. And I'm like, okay, now I can do my show. But then the side show was like, I was being split back and forth with two different shows, and there were some creative differences with the cast, with the hosts, I should say. And I was to the point where, like, you know what? I got some good advice from some good people, and I made a decision where it hurt me, but at the same time, the little creation that I made is in the hands of one of my good friends, Mike Quinn. And now he's running Table Talk. I have my show, and I'm his second mic now. But I feel that like we had some differences where he wanted to do one thing, I wanted to do another. I had this team that wanted to do this, and then we had that team, and we decided where to split. And, you know, we bounce back and forth. But now it's like the burden of me editing two shows, getting guests for all the shows. And now it's, you know, you deal with that one, I deal with mine. And it's been so much easier.
I'm betting it has. And what's the dichotomy between the two shows?
Oh, okay. So Table Talk is more, we're focused on, actually, no, Table Talk is us shooting the shit. But there was less structure. We had guests, and we would, whoever was on, we'd, you know, do like a little interview and then just shoot the shit. But it didn't have structure. Chaos was more of an informative thing where Jess, honestly, you met her that night. Very straightforward, like has a great head on her shoulder, very knowledgeable and very passionate about whatever she talks about. And when we first started recording, like this girl put me in my place on a lot of topics. Like she would shut me up, and that's what, you know, I love working with her because there's just so much passion in whatever she talks about. I can give her a topic, she'll research it, and boom, she's ready to go. And there are times where we'll wing it on something, but she will give deep insight on whatever we're talking about. And then my second co-host, Billy, who I've known for years from Halloween Horror Nights. He came. I brought him on Table Talk just as a help me out with music and editing. And then I realized, holy shit, dude, you and I have the same mentality, and we have great chemistry. I'm putting you on my show again. And we had him on both, and luckily Mike was cool enough. Well, I don't want to say cool enough. He wanted both of us to be on his show, and I'm glad that I'm able to share the stage with Billy on two shows, because Billy Anthony, is one of the coolest down to earth people that honestly, like, one of my best, honestly my best friend, because there's no malice, I don't get negativity from him. I can be myself around him. I can say something that's fucked up in my head, and there's no judgment there. He'll call me on my shit. He'll put me in my place, but like, he'll do it in like a brotherly sense. And I'm blessed to have a team that, you know, we just bounce off of each other. We've had differences here and there, but we were able to like, hey, let's talk about this. Let's find the problem. Let's nip it in the butt and move forward. And Chaos is more of a topical, insightful. Table Talk is more of an informative shit show. But each show has their differences. I mean, not differences. Similarities, but different platform.
Huh. And what's your goal with each one of them?
My goal is to get back on radio. When I was in Colorado... this will give you like 20 minutes of content.
Well, this is perfect.
I went to school for aviation, for Airframe Power Plant in Colorado, and avionics as well. And I was working at Best Buy. My roommates say, let's go to a strip club. We go to a strip club, and I ended up getting a job there as a bouncer and DJ and bartender. The money was good. The scenery was amazing. And one day this dude comes in, and I'm at DJ booth just, you know, introducing the girls, promoting drink specials. Hey, get your 2-for-1 lap dances right now.
Oh, that was amazing.
The dude comes up to me and is like, hey, I like your voice. Here's my card. Call me tomorrow. And I'm like, who the fuck are you? And I look at it, and it's a program director for 107.5 in Colorado. And I'm like, okay. And the thing was, I didn't call him like first thing in the morning. I called him like midday, like after class. And I say, hey, my name is Patricio. He might remember me as Rocky. He met me at so-and-so place. And they're like, oh, yes. We've been expecting your call. Do you see the address on the card? I'm like, yeah. Can you be here in an hour? What? Okay. I go with honestly no expectation, nothing. I get there, and the dude was like, why the hell did it take for you so long to call me back? I'm like, well, I go to school. I have a job. I have two jobs. He's like, well, you're about to get a third if you want it. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I like your voice. I like your attitude. How would you like to be on the radio? And I'm like, cool, I guess. You know, what do I do? And it was 2 weeks of breaking down FCC rules, breaking down. I was basically sitting in, and this was fucked up. They had me sit in on this airtime of the dude that I was going to replace. He didn't know that he was being replaced. And they're like, see what he does, see how he delivers, and make it better. And in 2 weeks, you're taking his spot. But don't tell him. I'm like, that's kind of fucked up.
Wow.
And then I remember it was a Wednesday afternoon. And it was time. They're like, so you're going to come in, and you're going to watch, you're going to sit on the show, and then we're cutting his contract tomorrow. I'm like, whoa. And the thing was, dude threw a fit. They didn't want to renew his contract, and he was just like out the door. They aired a best of thing for that night. And then Friday, they introduced a brand new segment because they were stretching out their afternoon show to a certain time. And then Friday nights was going to be a brand new segment where I introduced new music. I interviewed local musicians, out-of-town musicians. And They're like, you're going to have fun. You're going to introduce new things and just have at it. No, literally no experience. And then I get an hour and a half segment. And I fucking loved it. Thursdays, I'd be in to get notes for the show on Friday, find out where I was going to be, because they would give me the van with two interns from the radio station to go promote at clubs all over downtown Denver. So Friday night, I'm like, hey, guys, I'm going to be here tonight from, and so check me out. And I had that cheesy 90s radio DJ voice, and people loved it. And I got to do so much drugs. I got to have so much fun that 2 years, year and a half, I should say, doing the show. And at the same time, I was working at a strip club. I was going out with a stripper. I was going to school. I was working at Best Buy. And I may have slept maybe 3 hours every day.
Boy.
Yeah. And days that I had off from the strip club, my girlfriend would say, come to the club. Why? Because I just want you here. So me being 19 going on 20, I'm trying to do like my trigonometry in the back dressing room. And there's this huge mirror in front of me. And every 5 minutes, Rocky, how does this look? Like, they're showing me these tops. They're showing me their bottoms. I'm like, you're good. And like, I'm working on shit. I'm doing formulas. I'm doing equations. And I just had to glance up like half an inch and I would see heaven. I would see the most beautiful women fully naked. And I'm I can't complain. I have a great job. There's endless money coming in. I have a beautiful girlfriend. I'm blessed right now, so I'm not going to complain. My end goal, and not for the bad reasons, I want to get back on the radio because now I have a better appreciation for it. Because over the past, actually around the same time frame when I started working at the law firm, I realized that terrestrial radio, like music radio, is so fucking boring. Because it's the same shit every hour. You hear I can't do it no more. And that's why I started listening to talk radio. Like 104.1 is like my go-to station. When I wake up in the morning, I'm listening to the Monsters. Throughout the day, I got the News Junkie. Wrapping up the day, I got the Colbert Show. And then sometimes if I'm sober, I got Tom and Dan. And if I'm not inebriated and fucked up, I'm listening to Real Laughs. It's just different things every day. It's not the same music. Like, I got Spotify. I can listen to fucking Drake anytime that I want. Listening to Carlos Navarro on The Monsters. Listening to C-Lane on The News Junkie. Ross Padgett on Colbert. It's like new stuff every day. It's like it's a creative waterfall that keeps me entertained every second of my busy schedule. And it allows me to escape the stress and hassle of the workplace and listen to some guys talk for a little bit.
I can imagine it does help with the amount of stress that you have to go through day to day sometimes. And how much influence have they had on your talk show?
Oh man. Being able to meet Jack Bradshaw and have him on the show was an honor, because listening to the content that I hear from all of them, and the main inspiration, I mean, the 104.1 entertains me. My real inspiration came from Tom and Dan. I listened to the Phillips File back in the day, and for some odd reason, I stayed on the show, and I heard Tom and Dan once a week. And I'm like, these guys are cool. These guys are funny, except for Tom's laugh, which was fucking annoying. But love him to death. Next thing you know, they're like, oh, check out TomandDan.com and, you know, become a BDM. And I'm like, the hell is a BDM? And I'm like, what have I got to lose? I went to TomandDan.com. I started reading, and I'm like, $2.95 a month. Okay, why not? I blindly gave my credit card information, and 4.5 years later, it's the greatest decision I ever made, because becoming a BDM allowed me to meet the coolest people in the world, the most down to earth, genuine, loving, funny, amazing human beings that aren't afraid to say what's on their minds and are not going to allow society to, you know, put a filter on them. and all the meetups, all the beach parties, like every event that I've gone to with that's hosted by Tom and Dan or a BDM meetup is so much fun because I don't have to pretend. I don't have to put on any face. I don't have to put on a filter. I can just have a genuine conversation with a BDM and know that like they're not judging me. They're not going to talk shit. And I hold high esteem for, and I'm not pushing you aside, but any of my friends who are BDMs, it's like, you know, we have that hidden society, you know, the fingertip, the touching tips, mm-hmm. that I
ouch.
All my friends that who are not BDMs and have seen me like just walking around with them, like what a prime example. I was at Universal with a friend of mine, and some dude is like, hey, and I looked at him, he's like, oh, what's up? And we didn't say nothing, we didn't say anything else, but we just touched tips and walked on, you know, went on with our day. And my friends look at me like, what the fuck just happened? Like, don't worry about it. It's
a little club thing.
It's a little club thing.
So what does it mean to be a BDM?
Dude, it's raunchiness that the scumbags. I mean, we're a scumbag army. Everyone that I like I said, that I've met, coolest person in the world. Great opportunities. You know, the BDM community helps each other out. There have been times where someone has fallen on a hard time, and Tom and Dan have assisted. You know, hey, you know, let's help this guy out. Let's you know, raise some money to assist him and his family. People, you know, promote their local businesses. People, you know, do stuff that, you know, hey, you need social network. You need social media to help you get that boost. And the BDMs have always been there. And I've been, like I said, to countless meetups, and there's never been, in my experience, like hardcore drama. There's never been an issue with like a meetup where, oh my God, you know, a fight has started or this and that. You know, shit happens. You know, people are human. You know, people will talk shit all the time, but it's never been to a point where like I don't want to go to a BDM meetup. I look forward to meetups, and if it's within my like my wiggle room of my schedule, which is fucking crazy, I'm gonna go to the BDM beach party. I'm gonna go to the Halloween costume contest. I'm gonna go to a random meetup in Brevard County because so and so set it up, and it's a club. It's literally, I mean, you pay $2.95 for extra content and to be part of a community that is just filled with the coolest fucking scumbags you'll ever meet.
How large is this community? Is it Orlando or is it like all over?
Oh yeah, no, dude, we have there are BDMs like all over the country. Like I remember when I was going back to Chicago, I go to Chicago like once a year to visit my parents, and I remember posting on the BDM page, hey, I'm going to be in Chicago. If there are any BDMs, and boom, I got freaking like messages up the ass. Like, dude, you know, let's meet up here. And I reach out to Tony and Sam, ask them, hey, is there any merch or something that I could take to these guys? They hooked me up with magnets, stickers, like all you can think of. They're like, yeah, you know, hand it out, do this. And then 1 year, I remember doing a trip, planning a trip. This was when I was with my ex. I'm like, I want to go to DC. I had met this dude at a New Year's Eve party, and the dude was like 50 plus years old, but looked like he was 20 something. And I'm like, what's your secret? And he's like, I'm not afraid. I go somewhere where I've never been once a year. I take care of the dude just like reeked the positivity. And there were things like, I can't do that. I can do that. I can work on that. But the one thing that stuck out to me is like, go somewhere where you've never been once a year and just experience the world. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna start doing that. And every year, like, I just book the flight. I don't really try to plan it out, but just like, I just book the flight and I just do it. And my first one was going to Washington, D.C. And I kind of planned it out with my girl at the time and with her kids. Then they were like, oh, it's the week before school starts. It's going to be tough. I'm like, well, I still want to go. She's like, well, okay, you can go. You know, kids and I are going to stay. I'm like, fucking hey. I booked the flight's already booked. And I already had passes for the Pentagon tour the House of Representatives, the Capitol, like everything. A Ford Theater, everything was good to go. So I had canceled the hotel that we were going to stay at. And I'm like, you know what? Let me see what other options are available. I stayed in a fucking hostel for the 4 days that I was in D.C. And before the flight, I had called up Tom. I had messaged Tom and Dan. And I'm like, can I get some stickers to plaster all over D.C.? Sam sent me like a fucking stack load. And I kept taking pictures. And I kept posting, putting them in the weirdest fucking places. And like there were BDMs like all over DC. They're like, holy shit, who put this here? Who put this here? And like I'm like, yeah, it's me doing the sticker, the Tom and Dan sticker tour in DC. And dude, great time. And you know, I got to spread a little bit of the good word that is Tom and Dan.
Tom and Dan are an interesting duo in themselves. And I've noticed that you've actually met them a couple times.
Oh yeah, no. It's cool because like I'll message Dan once in a while because like I've been trying to coordinate with him to get him on the show, and he's like, dude, I'll be more than happy to. Schedule's busy, but like, you know, we bounce back and forth in regards to scheduling. But no, there was a there was one time where I had made a post that it's me at the edge of a pool, and it's honest to God so fucking emo, and I had posted saying, I can't deal with this shit no more. I'm out. And the thing was, I had posted that because I had a family member who has a drug addiction. And he had relapsed. And I couldn't do it no more. Because a few months before that, I was in the bathroom with him for 3 hours convincing him not to push on his needle. And then for that to happen, I'm like, dude, I can't do this no more. Because I'd gotten the call, and like my family kind of blames me for the downfall that he's gone through. And I'm like, just because, you know, I've had some problems doesn't mean I'm the one who's causing this shit. I could lead a horse to water, but it's up to him to drink. And I had posted that, and I went to bed because I got the call. They're like, oh, he's back in rehab. This is all your fault. I'm like, I can't deal with this. Made a post. And I turned off my phone and I went to bed. I put my phone on silent. I wake up to 60 plus text messages, God knows how many Snapchats, countless Facebook messages. The comments went up the ass. Oh, dude, no. My boss, like, here's a prime example. My boss was like, dude, come over. We're moving right now. Maybe you could help us out, but at least, you know, you'll be with people who care about you. Angel Rivera message, and he's like, dude, if you need to talk to someone, reach out to me. Then Daniel Dennis sent me a message. He's like, brother, if you need anything, please let me know. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. People think I'm trying to kill myself.
Oh no.
And the thing is, I live in a gated community, so I had missed calls. And people had been trying to get into the apartment complex with my gate code that some people do have. And no one could get in because I wasn't responding.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had to go on Facebook Live and be like, hey, I'm still alive. And like I'm showing my wrists. I'm like, I'm not hurting myself. It's just some personal shit happened. And I just had to deal with it. Daniel Dennis was talking to me for like a solid 2-3 weeks, like trying to help me to get through it, because I guess he'd been through some similar stuff with family. And like the dude was just like really helpful with some great insights, some good advice that I was able to apply, and it did help out. And the way that like he was just there for me was like, yo, this guy is more than just like a local celebrity. This is a real person. This is a dude who, whatever comes his way, deserves it. His success is because the man has an amazing heart, a wonderful attitude, and a loving heart. And despite the drama that is Tom and Dan and Real Radio, I won't go into that. But if you're a BDM, you know there's some animosity. And I've gotten some animosity because I'm the dude who chills with everybody. And it's bitten me in the ass, but I'm like, your drama is not my drama. your issues that you may have with so-and-so, I'm friends with him, I'm friends with you. I'm not going to bring you guys together, but I'm still cool with you guys. Until you do something to me, we're still going to hang out. And drama for me is just, I ain't got time for that. And I think that that's how society should be. We have time to focus on our families, our friends, our, you know, keeping food on the table, just stuff like that. Get the drama out of here.
Exactly.
I'm sure you've dealt with drama.
Tons.
And if we could just stop focusing on drama, we can have a good time.
Of course we can. And that brings me to the question that I've always asked everyone on my show. Why should I care about what you do, or your audience care about what you do?
I'm not trying to bullshit you. There are going to be some things that I may talk about that you don't agree with. I'm agnostic. I like Spanish food. I love hockey. Not a fan of Miley Cyrus. They're big things, little things. I hate Harry Potter, but I love Star Wars. I'm the person that I'm not going to bullshit you, but I'm going to try and have a good time with you. You have the right and you have the free will to listen to whatever you want. All I'm asking is for just a few minutes. You like what you like? You like what you hear? Continue. If not, hey, dude, more power to you. Thank you for the opportunity. Have a nice day.
That's a wonderful response to that question. And that brings us to the conclusion of this episode of The Experience with Chris Fio. Patricio Solando, thank you so much for being on my show.
Dude, Chris, thank you so much for having me. This was fun. And I'm sorry for knocking down your knocking down your studio, bro.
It's totally fine. This thing is like a tank. Y'all have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening. Go, but right now I know there's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that The Experience with Chris Fio is produced by Boris Douglas Garbe and Kyle Eagle. It is a joint production of Borma, Vonti, and PFT Media. The theme song is You and Me by NWAR Superstar.
A PFT Media production.